back, talking about Melchizedek and the priesthood of Jesus, and how the priesthood of Jesus is like the priesthood of Melchizedek. We were talking just kind of by way of review real quick, since it's been 2 weeks we had our class. We were talking about Melchizedek, the Pontifex Maximus, the high priest, okay, and his priesthood, and the idea that the word priest in Latin means bridge builder. And so the high priest in that office is intended to be, in a sense, a bridge builder between God and man, okay? And one of the things that we mentioned the last time is that there are only two other passages in all of the Bible outside of the book of Hebrews that mention Melchizedek. Okay? Most of the information that we get about Melchizedek is in the book of Hebrews and what the writer has to say. So we were asking the question, why this focus on the part of the writer of Hebrews on Melchizedek and who he is? And so it's really the answer to that has to do with it. Again, keep in mind, our study is focused on the idea that the early Christians and the early Hebrew Christians were, in a sense, kind of an entire church. They were already, by that time, the time that this was written, already kind of longing to go back to Judaism. There was a lot of persecution they were facing, a lot of hardship. They were facing persecution from non-Christian Jews. There was persecution, of course, from the Romans. So they were kind of getting tired, all right, and tempted to just go back to the way things were under Moses and under the priesthood there. And so the writer is really trying to help them understand that if you go back to where you were, then you're basically going back, first of all, as we saw last week, to something that no longer exists as far as God is concerned. Remember, we talked last time about the fact that that Christianity was not just something as an alternative religion to Judaism, but it replaced Judaism. Okay, we talked about Colossians chapter 2, where Paul shows that that written code, that is the law of Moses, had been taken out of the way. It was canceled, he said, taken out of the way and nailed to the cross. So that law, as far as between God and man, it doesn't exist anymore. Okay, it is not a Bible law. One of the things that I want to kind of go back and cover this just a little bit is another illustration of that. And if you can use this in terms of talking with other people about that. You talk to people today about, as we mentioned last time, keeping the Ten Commandments, and that's all you have to do is keep the Ten Commandments, and everything will be fine. Or people that want to keep the Sabbath, as we studied earlier. A lot of those Old Testament, Law of Moses, parts of it here and there, okay? Realizing that it no longer exists even for the Jews. But here's the most important thing. The law of Moses, we said before, never applied to anyone except the Jews. All right? So even if the law were still in existence today, which it is not, it still would not apply to you and I today in any way, shape, or form. So those who are Christians today, and we use that kind of broad, term there, those who are Christians but yet say, well, you still have to keep this part of the law, you got to keep the Sabbath, there's obviously a misunderstanding because they never were under the law of Moses to begin with. You see? So there's two things there that are important in sharing with people. Number one, as Gentiles, we were never under the law of Moses, so it doesn't apply to us, even if it were still in existence today. And secondly, it's not in existence today. As far as God is concerned, it's gone, it's over, it's done with. Okay? And then finally, if you look at it and you think about the laws that we have in America today, and I can't remember if we talked about this a couple weeks ago or not, but What system of law, or what is the basis of the law that we have here in America today? The U.S. Constitution, right? Okay, and all of the laws that are part of the U.S. Constitution. Now, at one time in the history of America, we were under a different law. Anybody know what law that was? English law. Okay? We were under, this America was under the English law, and we were under that until, when? 1776, when we decided to fight a revolution. And by the way, the Constitution wasn't ratified until, when? Anybody have an idea? What? 1789, I think it was, when it was actually ratified by all 13 colonies. Okay? So what happened was we were under that British law in that time. Now, before British law came in, those who lived in America before, you know, Columbus came and, you know, when people started colonizing America, what was the law that was here in the land? Indian law. Okay? The law that the different Indian tribes had. Now, today, if someone is charged with a crime, what law are they charged under? Since we've had at least three different forms of law here in America. The last one, the Constitution, because that's the one that's enforced now, right? Nobody would be charged today for a crime under the English law because it's not enforced anymore. It's been replaced by the U.S. Constitution. All right? And unless you are an Indian living in Indian tribal lands, some laws of which still apply, Indian laws and so forth, in conjunction with the federal laws and so forth on those federal lands. But, you know, we don't follow those laws either. Now, do we have similar laws from all three law systems? Certainly. Even in Indian law, it was against Indian law to murder people. Now, you know, you don't get that impression from watching the Westerns on TV, do you? You say? But yeah, the different tribes and nations, Indian nations, had laws within themselves governing, you know, how they were to live with one another. But that law has been replaced, as has the English law been replaced. They were under the Constitution. And so it's the very same thing with the law of Moses. That law was the law between man and God for a time, but it has been replaced. Just like the U.S. Constitution replaced the law of England, right, and it's no longer effective today, the law of Moses is no longer effective either. Okay? Any questions at all on this?
I'm trying to explain it to you. It's a stepping stone. It took this to get us to this more
right. Which is the same thing as our laws in America, isn't it? You know, it was a stepping stone. We had to start somewhere. So we had, you know, the tribal laws, and then they were replaced by the law of England, and there was another stepping stone that came when, you know, we kicked the English out and replaced their law with our own, right? I mean, a little bit more to it than that, but that's basically what happened. But Paul makes it clear that the law of Moses is no longer enforced. It has been taken out of the way and nailed to the cross, so it no longer applies. And the important part about this that we're looking at is that part, the main part of the law that he's focusing on here with Melchizedek has to do with the high priest and the system of the priesthood itself. Okay, that part of the law, just like all the rest of the law, has been done away with. Okay. And so what he's trying to do through focusing on Melchizedek is to show, look, what you had under the law of Moses was something that was temporary. Okay? What you have under Jesus is something that is far better, okay? Because it goes all the way back to Melchizedek in the sense that he is a priest in the order of Melchizedek, and that Melchizedek had what? No beginning and no end. Right? And the fact that the one who they looked to as their father, Abraham, paid tithes to Melchizedek. Right? And Melchizedek blessed Abraham for what he had done. So all of this is to try to encourage these Hebrew Christians to not give up and not, you know, let go of Christ and to go back to what they had been used to in living under an inferior priesthood under the law of Moses. Okay? So let's talk in the rest of this this part of it here. Let's talk about a superior priesthood. In other words, if the priesthood of Jesus, that is after the order of Melchizedek, is a superior priesthood than that under the law of Moses, why so? What is it about the priesthood of Jesus that makes it a superior priesthood, one that they should want to hold on to rather than to be satisfied to go back to the priesthood under the law of Moses? Why is it such a superior priesthood? So let's talk about a few things here that establish that. First of all, the priesthood under Jesus is an international priesthood. Okay, well, what does that mean? Well, Judaism, and thus the law of Moses, as we mentioned a few moments ago, was really a religion and a priesthood of one nation. Okay? Though, as we mentioned before, there was some proselytizing of Gentiles by Jews, that was minimal. In other words, there wasn't a hard press to go out into the Gentile world and bring Gentiles into Judaism. In fact, what we see throughout the history of the Jews is something quite the opposite. What was their attitude and approach towards Gentiles? Yeah, it's like stay away from them. And really it was more of a, we've got God, you don't, ha ha ha, you see. And so it was not international, although God's intention when he gave them the law was international, was it not? Okay? God never intended for them to kind of shut themselves off from the rest of the world. All right? What he had intended by giving them the law is that they were to be a light for the world to show the rest of the world how God wanted to live in relationship with them. The Jews, however, took the restrictions in the law of keeping themselves separate and so forth. They took those in the wrong way and looked at everyone who was not a Jew as being their enemy, as being unclean and so forth. And so they were not the light that God intended for them to do. And instead, what they had done was taken their light that God had given them, and as Jesus refers to in Matthew 5, they hid their light under the bowl. You see, instead of allowing it to give light to the world. Christianity is an international priesthood that is concerned with a global frontier. Okay, remember a few weeks ago we were talking about the whole spirit of frontierism, the idea of, you know, oppressing, you know, you reach the borders, you know, you press further and you keep going. And that's what Christianity is all about. It is not intended to stay in one place or to be among one group of people, but it is intended by God to be spread throughout the world. Okay? How many people does God want to be saved? All of them, okay? That's what he wants, all right? And so, when Jesus gave the Great Commission, what parts of the world did he tell the disciples to go into and preach the gospel? All the world. He didn't say, I want you to go, you know, this part or that part. He said, go into all the world and preach the good news, right? And so, it is international in its scope with Jesus as the high priest. You know, it is an international priesthood, so it is in that respect, it is superior to the priesthood under Aaron and Moses. Secondly, Melchizedek was greater than Abraham, and Jesus was in the order of Melchizedek, and we've been discussing this whole part of it here. Look in Hebrews 7, verses 5 through 7. Okay? So, now, understand that, you know, when you talk to an Israelite about Abraham, and I've mentioned this before, Abraham is one of those names that when you mention it, people are going to sit up and take notice. They want to hear what you've got to say about Abraham. Because for to them, Abraham was their father. Okay? And so you're going to sit up and take notice and pay attention, right? Look at what the writer says in Hebrews 7, beginning in verse 5. Now the law requires the descendants of Levi who become priests to collect a tenth from the people. That is, their brothers. Even though their brothers are descended from Abraham. This man, however, he's talking about Melchizedek, did not trace his descent from Levi, yet he collected a tenth from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. And without a doubt, the lesser person is blessed by the greater. Okay? Now, that kind of a statement to an Israelite would kind of border almost on heresy here. Okay? You know, wait a minute, you're talking about somebody, you're saying somebody is greater than Abraham? And the writer, that's exactly what he's doing. Okay, look again what he says here. Without a doubt, the lesser is blessed by the greater. Who blessed who? Yeah, Melchizedek blessed Abraham. So it's very, very clear and plain here what he's saying, isn't it? Okay, Melchizedek is greater than Abraham.
Why
does
Melchizedek claim that he also backed up?
Oh. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It wasn't just, hey, I like Melchizedek better than Abraham. You know, it's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. So you think about the shock to them to hear that there was one greater than Abraham. Right? But look over in John chapter 8. Turn over there to John chapter 8 for a moment. Let me get somebody to read verses 48 through 59.
Then the Jews answered and said unto him, Do we not say rather that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jesus answered, I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. And I do not seek my own glory, but there is one who seeks and judges. Most surely I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he shall never see death. Then the Jews said to him, And we know that you have a demon. Abraham is dead, and the prophets, and you say, If anyone keeps my word, he shall never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who is dead, and the prophets are dead? Do you make yourself out to be? Who do you make yourself out to be? Jesus answered, If I honor myself, my honor is nothing. Then the Jews said to him, You are not yet 50 years old, and yet you have seen Abraham. Jesus said to them, Most assuredly I said to you, before Abraham was, I am. Then they took up stones to throw at him. Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, so fast.
Okay. So you see, this passage illustrates how seriously they take issues with Abraham, right? Okay? And so they're disputing with Jesus over, who he is and his authority to say and do the things that he's doing. And what do? They go back to Abraham. All right? And again, notice a couple of things here that, of course, they're accusing him of being possessed by a demon. And then verse 53, are you greater than our father Abraham? When you make a claim that says, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death, what were they hearing in that statement? Abraham didn't keep the word of God because he died. Is that what you're telling us? Is that what you're saying here? Okay. So you're putting yourself as being greater than our father Abraham. And of course, then Jesus in that dialogue says to them, before Abraham was, I am. Now that statement has a lot of significance, more than just concerning Abraham here, because it identifies him as who? As God, okay? The same God who met Moses on the mountain at the bush that was burning, and when he asked God, if they asked me who sent me, who should I tell them? What is your name? And what was the response? Tell them I am sent you. Okay? God's name literally is I am. And Jesus here is claiming to be God by using that statement. Before Abraham even existed, I am. Okay? So if you think Abraham's something, okay, then you need to understand I've existed before Abraham was ever around. Okay? And again, that's part of the reason why, you know, they need to hold on to Jesus and not go back to the old way of things. Because they're going back to something that is inferior to Jesus. And Jesus is trying to draw them to himself, which is far superior, under a priesthood that is far superior. The Hebrew Christians, the writer here exhorts them then to keep their eyes on Jesus. Okay? The focus is not about Abraham. He doesn't say go back and remember what Abraham did for you. He says keep your focus on Jesus. Okay? Look over, for example, go back over to chapter 2, verse 29. Somebody read that for us? And let me get somebody else to jump all the way over to chapter 12 of Hebrews in verse 2. 2, verse 29. Hebrews. Did I give you the wrong verse? I'm in the wrong place here. Okay, forget that one. I'll find it. I got the wrong reference here. Okay, what about 12 verse 2? You got that, Charlotte? Oh, okay. You're looking like you did. Okay, who's got 12 verse 2? All right, Lynette?
When you come to Jesus,
the
author of the finisher of faith, and for the joy that is set before you, and for the cross, despise and shame, and set down
the right hand. Okay. That he basically exhorts them to keep their eyes on Jesus. He says the author, or sometimes they say perfecter or finisher of our faith. Okay, that's what the word perfect means, is complete or finished, all right? That Jesus is the perfecter of our faith, not Abraham. Okay, Abraham did not perfect our faith, though Abraham had, as some would argue, perfect faith or complete faith in God. Not perfect being meaning without any kind of mistake or error. You understand the difference there, okay? He had complete faith. He was not the author and finisher of our faith, okay? And so the writer here is trying to get them to, again, keep their focus on Jesus, keep their eyes on Jesus, because they're tempted to take their eyes off of Jesus and look elsewhere. And the same thing is true of Christians today. That many today are tempted to take their eyes off Jesus and look elsewhere, and especially for two important things, peace and security. Okay? Ryan, hold on just a second here, okay? If you go back to Hebrews 7 and verse 2, notice that the writer there, in describing Melchizedek, look at what he says about his name, okay? First of all, his name means what? King of righteousness, okay? Then also King of Salem, which means King of peace, okay? So we're talking about here righteousness and peace. The writer is trying to get them to focus on what this priesthood under the order of Melchizedek has to offer. Was Jesus not a priest in the order of Melchizedek in the same way? Okay? Was he not a king of righteousness? Is he not a king of righteousness? Absolutely so. Is he not the king of peace? Absolutely. You see? And so in that way, he is a king in the order of Melchizedek. So without righteousness, there is no security. And without security, there is no peace. Ryan, what's your comment?
The comment is back in John 8, verse 56, saying the same thing that Abraham was keeping his eyes on Jesus.
Right.
That he was looking forward to it when he passed away, that he was with Jesus, and that he saw that day in your voice.
Yeah.
That even Abraham was keeping his eyes on Jesus.
So, what's the lesson? Keep your eyes on Jesus. Not Abraham, not Moses, not Aaron and the high priesthood, but on Jesus. Okay? So we're talking about this righteousness. Again, the statement here, without righteousness, there's no security. And isn't security something that everybody is concerned about? Okay? We all want security, whether we're talking about security from, you know, violence that we have in our world, whether we're talking about financial security, family security, whatever. We want security in our life. When we don't feel secure, then we don't have peace in our lives, do we? Okay? But security comes through righteousness. Okay? Romans chapter 3, verse 22, Paul says there is a righteousness from God that comes through faith in Jesus. Right? Righteousness from God that comes from faith through faith in Jesus. And then look over in Romans 4. Let me continue to turn over there. Romans 4, beginning in verse 1. We're going to look in verses 1 through 12 in this section here. All right? Romans 4. Who would like to read?
Clearly,
So, you know, the writer here is focusing on Melchizedek and on Abraham. And Paul goes back to Abraham in a text that basically Paul, in this text, is talking about the fact that we are saved not by our works or the works of the law, following the law of Moses, which is what many of the Jewish Christians were struggling with. You're not saved by following the works of the law of Moses, keeping the law. You are saved by what? Faith. Okay? This is not a faith and works, faith versus works argument, by the way. Okay? This is not a, the writer Paul here is not discussing the whole issue of we don't have to work in order for our salvation versus, you know, hey, everything is just by faith. He's talking about, you want to, faith versus works in that regard, go and see what James has to say, in other words. Okay? We do have to work out our salvation. Okay? There are things that we have to do. James makes it clear that we show our faith by what? By our works, okay? Well, Paul is talking about works of the law of Moses, keeping the law. That cannot save you. We're not saved by that. We're saved by God's grace through faith. And his point here is, mainly, that using Abraham and going back to, if you say that we have to keep the law, we've got to be circumcised in order to be saved, well, Abraham was considered, what? Righteous before he was circumcised. Okay? So that kills that argument right there. Okay? Which, by the way, a lot of people use that very same, this same logic, which is illogical, when they're talking about baptism today. I'll throw this in for free for you, all right? I'm going to charge you extra for this morning, all right? Because when you talk to people about baptism, is baptism necessary to salvation? What do they always go back to? They look for an exception, and that exception is who? The thief on the cross. Jesus said to the thief on the cross, today you'll be with me in paradise. When he wasn't baptized, they argued. We didn't have to be. What law did the thief live under? The law of Moses. Okay? The law of Moses. The law of Christ wasn't applied yet. Okay? So it's an easy answer to that. But it's basically the same kind of argument. Look for the exception to the rule. And here, Paul is saying, look, Abraham was not circumcised before he was credited by God as being righteous. Circumcision didn't have anything to do with it.
Okay? It was a work of his faith.
It was a work of his faith. He obeyed God. Okay? He obeyed God. He did what God told him to do. That's why, by the way, that James can use the very same example of Abraham and his obedience to God in arguing that, yes, you have to have faith and works together. You see? So Paul and James are not contradicting one another. They're talking about something completely different. All right? But then look at this really important part of it. I'm trying to watch our time here. Look at this really important part of it. As he says, so then he, that is Abraham, is the father of all who believe, but have not been circumcised. Who's he talking about there? Everybody, the Gentiles. Okay? He's the father of everyone. All right? In order that righteousness might be credited to them. And he is also the father of the circumcised, who not only are circumcised, but who also walk in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had before he was circumcised. So again, here's an emphasis that Paul is putting on. It's not just a matter of that you got circumcised so everything's okay. What does he say? They were circumcised, but they also did what? What does he say there? They walk in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had. So even Paul is arguing in this that it's not just enough to follow a law. You've got to have obedience to that, and it's got to be obedience through faith. Okay? Again, just kind of emphasizing and showing that all of their focus on Abraham and how important he was to them falls by the wayside when it comes to Jesus. Because Jesus was far greater even than Abraham. And then his is a perfect priesthood. Okay, Jesus is a perfect priesthood. The priesthood of Jesus is a spiritual priesthood. The priesthood under Aaron was a physical priesthood. Right? It was temporary, and as we said earlier, that priesthood is now gone. Jesus' priesthood is a spiritual priesthood that endures forever. Okay? Look in chapter 7, verses 21 through 25 of Hebrews. Who's got that? So, this priesthood is a perfect priesthood in that it is the real thing, and that it is a forever priesthood, and that it never will end. Okay? Skip ahead for just a moment to chapter 8, verses 1 through 5. Let me get somebody to read there for us. Who's got it? Okay, so what kind of a tabernacle did the priests under Moses serve in? A physical, but what else kind of tabernacle was it? A temporary. And what else was it? It was a, he says, a shadow or a copy of the good things to come, of the sanctuary that is in heaven, the real one. So in other words, when God gave Moses instructions to build the tabernacle in the wilderness, what was the pattern that he used? Heaven, okay? And that's one of the reasons why, according to the writer here, that God told Moses, and he told him this over and over again, see to it that you make it exactly according to the pattern that I showed you on the mountain. Don't deviate from it at all. But even so, it's something that was made by man, and it was temporary. How long did they even use the tabernacle in the wilderness? Okay. They used it until they got to Jerusalem and Solomon built the temple. Okay?
Well, that's what he's done here. It all is done right here. They knew that the judgment priesthood would be perfection. The only thing you could do is roll your sin forward.
Right.
So that's not perfection. And then Jesus, so the priest like Jesus had to come along by giving up himself. Otherwise, the Levitical priesthood would be no need for that.
Exactly.
So you needed someone superior.
simply be. It's really a reference to the whole concept of Melchizedek, first of all, being before the priesthood of under Aaron, okay? And secondly, that it was superior and that he had no beginning and had no end, just like Jesus. There's no beginning and no end to Jesus and his priesthood and so forth. And then the other part of that is the fact that Abraham, being as great as he was, okay, was not as great as Melchizedek. All right? So basically what he's really trying to do by focusing on Melchizedek is to show them, look, you need Abraham something. Let me tell you about Melchizedek. Abraham paid tribute to Melchizedek, and Melchizedek blessed him. And Melchizedek was greater than Abraham. Now let me tell you about somebody who's even greater than Melchizedek, and that's Jesus. So that's the gist of what he's trying to do, is to show them that under Jesus they have such a superior priesthood. And they've got to stop relying on the priesthood under Moses and the priest, and stop relying on Abraham. And focus or keep their eyes on Jesus. Everything that they had under Moses and the law and the priesthood there was a shadow, a copy. And it was temporary in nature. What Jesus, and then the emphasis here, we finish up here, the emphasis that he makes here, those priests, notice that he says here, since death prevented them from continuing in office, okay? They died, and they had to be replaced. Jesus died one time in offering the ultimate sacrifice that actually took away sins, not rolled them back, as you said, okay? But then he rose again, and he continues to live. All right? Correct. Notice that the last thing that he says there about Jesus and his priesthood, therefore he is able to save completely those who come to God through him. Because he always lives to intercede for them. Okay? He is a priest that continues to live and continues to intercede for us. Which is goes right along with what John says in 1 John chapter 1 about walking in the light as he is in the light and having his blood that continues to purify us. He continues to intercede for us as our high priest. Alright? Okay. Next week we're going to be talking about waking up a tired church. I want to encourage you to go back to what we just read a few moments ago, chapter 8, verses 1 through 6. We'll talk about that and some other things. Alright? Thank you all very much.